This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Kusha Navidar in for Allison Stewart. Just a reminder that we are now reading our April Get Lit with All of It book club pick. It's My Heart is a Chainsaw, and it's by celebrated horror writer Stephen Graham Jones. Here's the story. It follows a half-Indigenous girl named Jade who feels alienated from the rest of the kids in her small town. The only comfort she finds is in horror movies, but when murders actually start happening around her, Jade decides to use her horror acumen to get to the bottom of what's going on. Stephen Graham Jones will join us in person on Monday, April 29th at 6 p.m. at the New York Public Library's branch on 5th Ave and 40th Street. And for free tickets and to get information about how New Yorkers can borrow an e-copy of the book, just head on over to wnyc.org/getlit. All right, that's in the future. So now let's get this hour started with Eddie Izzard. You probably know the play Hamlet. We're in Denmark and something's rotten. The king is dead. His son Hamlet becomes consumed with the desire for revenge, plotting to kill the new king. But of course, things don't go as planned. There's intrigue, betrayal, soliloquies, action. And here in New York, I was lucky to get to see the legend Eddie Izzard perform an adaptation of Hamlet I'd never quite seen before. Over 2.5 hours, Eddie plays all 23 characters. Hamlet, Ophelia, Gertrude, Claudius, Laertes, even Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. And she plays these characters all by herself. You know Eddie Izzard as a street performer, as a stand-up comedian, as a film actor, as a stage actor. But here's something I think you need to understand about Eddie Izzard to truly appreciate this current show. Eddie runs marathons. Since 2009, she has run 131 marathons. That is the level of stamina I think it requires to do Hamlet by yourself. Eddie navigates this classic Shakespearean tragedy seamlessly, dramatically, and with what appears to be infinite jest. Did I mention that she plays all 23 characters by herself? Hamlet is running until Sunday, April 14th at the Orpheum Theater, and with us now to talk about this performance is Eddie Izzard. Eddie, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much, and thank you for that introduction. Because I don't see it as a marathon. I think I see it as quite a tiring thing to do, because it's 2.5 hours, but the interval's in there, so it's only about a 2-hour show for people coming and thinking it's a long version. It's actually a shorter version than, you know, 4 hours it can be, but I don't think they ever performed the 4-hour version, because you may know this, there was a Shakespeare had a 2-hour version came out first, and then a 4-hour version came out the next year, which is like, what's that all about? But no one's really quite got to the bottom of that. But yes, I'm really enjoying doing it now. And it is William Shakespeare's Hamlet, and not some comedy version, not some comedy take. It's done with due honor, as you saw, to the text.
Yeah, it is consumable. It is digestible. It is, I think, accessible, which is a key piece that I would love to get into. And it is done with great energy. And I'm curious, what was it about Hamlet in particular out of all other Shakespearean plays that compelled you? Because I'm thinking of other plays with strong leads, too. There's Henry V, Richard III. What was it about Hamlet that you thought would fit this one-person show so well?
I think Hamlet is the top of the line. The highest bar in acting, you know, one of the highest bars. So I sort of went for that. I was thinking of Richard III maybe, or something else. But I just thought I'd go for that. I'm dyslexic at school. I had a real difficulty with the language, but I just thought, let's go for it and see where I land. And having done Great Expectations last year to rave reviews here and in London, this one-person show playing all the characters using this technique where I'm not using screens, not using cameras, anything else. It's just me on the stage playing, and I'm playing all the characters. It worked, and people loved it last year. So I was already planning to do Hamlet, but I sort of built that on top of the Great Expectations.
I understand that you did grow up dyslexic. How does that background shape how you wanted to tackle Shakespeare? What does learning lines look like to you?
Well, the learning of the lines isn't a problem, it's if I was looking at a script and going from a script up to words. Like at school, I didn't get any roles. So I'm like, you know, at seven, I wanted to act. Acting was my first love. Comedy came second, but acting was my first love. But at school, like everyone, probably everyone in America, everyone around the world, you'd get given a certain set of lines and you have to look at the lines and then do a sight unseen audition. And that was very hard for me. So I couldn't do that. I just found that very difficult to do. And so they did, you know, I stumbled over the words and I couldn't do that. But if you're practicing and practicing and practicing the lines, then it gets easier. And I have got a great memory map. So I can do that, and that works for me. And so so it's 13,500 words. Initially, it's really tough because you can't really start rehearsing it until you get into it. But it's once you've got the lines in your head, then it starts to fly.
And it's learning the lines. It's also the selection of lines. Like you said, part of what's great about this show is its digestibility and the ability for folks to, you know, see a full play in about 2 hours worth of content. The adaptation of it, I thought, was really interesting. I understand that your brother Mark is the one who adapted the play for the stage. Is that correct?
Yes, he is. He is the one who adapted the play, and he's a natural academic. When I do gigs, you may know this, I do stand-up comedy in French, German, and Spanish, and he's also a language expert. I'm quite good at languages. He's very good at languages. And so I started working with him then. We have the same sense of humor, so the humor helped when I was doing stand-up, and he was translating everything to French, German, Spanish, or helping me with that. And then I said to him, do you want to do the adaptation for Great Expectations? He just went, and I was going to do it with him, and he just went ahead and did it. And I said, okay, you've got Hamlet now. And he went and did that too. So he went in and he wanted to make it accessible. This thing, Zeffirelli, when he did the Mel Gibson Hamlet, he talked about accessibility, trying to get it so that people who are worried about Shakespeare, scared of Shakespeare, or do not like Shakespeare because they find Elizabethan verse too bizarre, you want it grabbable. And people do forget this thing that when Shakespeare wrote it in 1600, you know, right at the turn of the century, going 1500s, going into the 1600s, certain things like, you know, take your own life with a bear bodkin. People knew what a bear bodkin was, which was, it's a big kind of long needle used for leather making. And his dad was a glove maker, and probably bodkins were 10 a penny hanging about the place. Everyone had a bodkin there, and you could, and that, so he changed bodkin to two syllables into dagger. And then people know, dagger, we know what it is. And of course, Shakespeare, he wanted his audience to grab this, the words that he was saying, and not sit there going, I don't know what he's talking about. And that's the trouble with 400 years. Certain things lose their immediacy and lose their translations.
It reminds me of the director's note that I saw on the playbill from your director, Selena Cadell, who wrote that Shakespeare theater was essentially street theater. And it seems like you and your director agree that the key ingredient in Shakespeare's plays is, quote, like talking to the house, acknowledging the audience. How did that come through for you in this show?
Yes, I wanted to talk to the audience and and the street performing, I'm one of the few people who has played in with I've played two people who don't want to see the show in the first place, and that's the good thing. When the 4 years on the street in Covent Garden, I was performing there, and the people were right in front of me, so you're talking right at them, and it is street performers. So you are admitting the audience is there. But of course, all these actors who did Shakespeare, if you go to the Globe Theatre now in London that exists, you can see that the groundlings, the people standing, not seated, but standing in front of them, are standing there, and they're right in front. And you need to admit that they're there. And that's what they did back in those days, because they had been travelling players. Then the first theatres in England were started to be built in the late 1500s. So Shakespeare was coming into this point where people were changing from travelling players into using these theatres, which had been back in the Greek and the Roman times, but I think theatres have been stopped due to religion. I think that must have been the reason for 1500 years theatres went away. But I have this experience of 4 years of talking to audiences, and then stand up 35 years of that, where you're sort of talking at them but to them, whereas acting is quite often you don't even admit the audience is there. And so for the soliloquies, it was sort of easy for me, much easier for me, because I'd had so much experience doing it, and I wanted to talk to the audience. And it's getting easier and better and stronger as the time goes on. We've been playing here in New York. The reviews have been fantastic. We've got to go on to Chicago before there and then on to London. And it's just these last few days coming up to the Sunday matinee of the last days in New York. But the New York audiences have been very welcoming. And the Orpheum Theatre is a great venue to play it.
What does it look like to speak to the audience in a way that keeps them engaged? Because, you know, I'm thinking about street performances. There is no need for somebody to stay there. It's among the hardest venues to keep that attention. What did you learn from that? You know, I think you mentioned 4 years of doing that. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. What did you learn that you apply now?
Well, it's much easier to hold these people because one, they bought the ticket. The thing about street performing is that they haven't bought a ticket. They haven't committed at all. They're just strolling around. Say Covent Garden. If anyone's seen My Fair Lady, where Eliza Doolittle is initially accosted, well, Henry Duda is listening and he's saying, oh, she sounds really odd. And I can tell where she's come from. That's Covent Garden. That's Covent Garden, which has turned into a street performing place and a place with loads of shops and people wander around by having coffees and excuse me, and buying things from that area, Covent Garden Market. And people would stroll along and you'd have to be interesting enough for them to stop. And they might stop for, you know, like 30 seconds. Fine, that's no good. You need them to stop for half an hour. So you'd have to be fantastically interesting. But here in the theater, it's much easier for me. The main thing that I can get from that I can bring across from my street performing experience is the experience of looking at people's faces and talking to them when these soliloquies are, I feel, talking to inside Hamlet's brain. It's like the Greek chorus of his own mind trying to argue with himself. Because if anyone knows the play, Dad says, I've been killed by my brother, avenge me, at the end of act one. And there's four more acts. And you go, well, what does he do? But Shakespeare wanted to obviously keep the play going and have this. I think Hamlet might be actually the character of Shakespeare, someone who's hyper-analytical, too analytical, thinks too precisely on the events, as Hamlet says of himself. He just over-analyzes everything. And instead of going out like Laertes and doing death, Hamlet delays and delays and pretends to be mad, and then this is not sure. And then when he does kill someone, it's the wrong person that he has just sent to England. Then the pirates attack. It's yeah, spoiler alerts here, but the talking to people, looking at their faces, that is a very interesting thing that I've had a lot of experience of, and is not training that any actor really, well, most actors, 99.99% of them, will have. So my training has been so unusual to get to this place that what I'm doing has got to be different in some way. And with good imaginations, people just, they seem to love what I'm doing. So I love doing it. I'll keep doing it.
And it's funny that you mentioned the end of Act One, because we're coming right up on a break, but there's a lot more to get into. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to go into a little bit about the physicality of what it takes to play 23 characters at once. We're talking with Eddie Izzard, who's playing Hamlet right now at the Orpheum Theater until next Sunday, April 14th. This is All of It. We'll be right back. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Kusha Navadar, and we're talking with comedian and actor Eddie Izzard, who is playing Hamlet at the Orpheum Theater until next Sunday, April 14th. Here is one of the very interesting parts of this performance. Eddie is playing all 23 characters of Hamlet herself on stage. Eddie, you said in an interview that being funny wasn't Shakespeare's strong suit, that his beauty was in his poetry. And when I watched your performance, I certainly heard a lot of laughter. How did you decide where to add the comedic touches to what is a dramatic retelling, very grounded retelling of Hamlet?
Well, yes, it is a drama, but 15% of the time of the story has comedic elements in it. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, the interchanges with Hamlet, are comedic. Polonius is quite a buffoon-type character, and his interchanges are quite comedic with the whole Hamlet being mad and reading scene where Polonius tries to interact with him. There are a number of things that go on there, but it's only about 15% of the time. Some people do think, oh, I'm a comedian, I've done a comedy take on this. I haven't. I am a dramatic actor, and I just have a sense of comedy. So I just lean into the comedy that's there. Anything else that is not comedic, I mean, anything that's not comedic, I will not lead into. And some people might get it wrong or think, oh, the ghost is right. No, the ghost is not. The ghost is the ghost. And some people, I don't know, they might take the wrong cue. But the vast majority of audiences, they understand what I'm doing, or they get the hang of it very quickly. And it's the beauty of the poetry, the characters tearing each other apart. And occasionally, I think Shakespeare has the comic relief in there because it is tough. It is. Somebody said Spanish theater, but hopefully this isn't Spanish theater. Hopefully the story can be followed. People who love Shakespeare, they should like this because the story arc, it's right in there. We are absolutely true and honorable to that. And if they're wary of Shakespeare or new to Shakespeare, they should also grab it because it does explain the way you do see where the characters are going. Mm-hmm. You do see the character arcs, and in the end, it doesn't end great, but it is one of the great tragedies of the written language. So
the story doesn't end great, but the performance certainly does end great. The story,
pretty amazing.
And you know, I'm wondering about your relationship with language. You mentioned you're polyglot before the break. Different languages that you've performed in, done stand-up comedy in. Did you learn anything from performing in different languages that show up when you do Shakespeare?
The only thing, not overtly actually, the only thing is be clear. You know, if you pronounce a word in French and you get it wrong, like the certain words in English, that if you have a strong accent on it, people are going, what are you quite saying there? It will get lost. And so I being very articulate on the poetry, on the words, I mean, because this is Elizabethan verse, and American audiences, you know, if you're new to Shakespeare, you might think, well, this Elizabethan verse, British people understand all about that, but we don't. It's as alien to us as it is to the American ear. But when it's written in prose, like the Gravedigger scene, that is how they were speaking back in the 1600s, and they were speaking much more just like we talk today. The Elizabethan verse was a style that was used then in the prose. And I think, and it really helps, it has an interesting tension in it, the iambic pentameter, and it keeps the whole play moving along at a certain speed. So from doing things in French, I think confidence-wise, having been able to stand on stage, say, bonsoir, mesdames et messieurs, je suis ici pour faire un spectacle en français, and in Paris, and ad-libbing, and I was improvising and ad-libbing in French and in German, alles auf Deutsch in Berlin, and I was doing this. So that gives you a confidence of standing on the stage. And so when I stand on the stage to do all these characters as Hamlet, and when the to-be speech came up for the first time, that's quite a pressure on your shoulders. Mm. But I don't feel it so much because I have taken on really quite tough challenges. And I say challenges, they're not like I'm trying to do art as a challenge. It's just I've pushed the edge of my fear back and back because I do think performing in different languages is great for communication. I do think someone who's scared of Shakespeare and the Elizabethan verse going into to owning it and inhaling it and performing it all is a beautiful thing because it makes your own confidence grow and hopefully the audience can grab it as well. And people, again, who might have been intimidated by Elizabethan verse will come along and think, I understand what was going on. Mm. I see the whole story.
And that the confidence that you mentioned, I think is so key because there's also the sense of being confident in the words that you have on the page, confidence that the words will convey the meaning. And I think that comes in a lot with Shakespeare as well. And I imagine, especially when all of those words are covering different characters that you're performing yourself, that must be key as well. And it makes me think of the physicality that you bring to the performance too, because the physicality that we see on stage is key. How did you go about blocking and embodying all these different characters?
Well, seeing as it's called me, it's me as Hamlet, then initially me as Horatio, me and Bernardo, and then me as Hamlet, me as Claudius. The audience are going to go, this just sounds like one guy going around talking to himself. And so the thing that we did with Great Expectations last year is to have a certain physicality, a certain thing in their voice. Their voices hopefully change to a certain degree, sometimes quite a lot. Their physicality. Polonius has a walking stick that he moves with. Claudius is much more of a bombast person. Hamlet is quite like myself. Horatio, Hamlet, and Laertes, I think, from similar class. They're all sort of posh kids who went to posh school in Wittenberg in Germany. And So they were more difficult to pull apart. But I've tried to do that to make it work in on the stage, so that people can see the characters differently.
So we're talking to Eddie Izzard. This is All of It. I'm Kushan Avidar, and we're talking to Eddie about Hamlet, which is running at the Orpheum Theater until next Sunday, April 14th. And, you know, it's talking more about the physicality, Eddie. I was so drawn to that last act of the play, the fight sequence. The choreography and the movement was so tight. I mean, you were alone, but you were fighting against yourself. The stage felt very full. And so I looked up in the bill, your fight director, who's J. Allen Suddeth, who's one of the great fight masters of the stage. Can you talk me through how you two went about preparing this sequence?
Well, Alan, he was experienced of doing the Shakespeare, the Hamlet fight. So he was very helpful on that front, on being the whole framework of what the fight should be. I was also a fight director way back at university when I directed Three Musketeers, and I decided to be the fight director. So I studied Mr. Hobbs, who was the fight director for the Three Musketeers, the film version. He had a book out, so I actually read that book and then sort of taught myself from a book. And this was years ago. And then when we were street performers, me and my partner Rob Ballard, we did a sword fighting show as well. So I had been a sword fighter who'd done it for a year, maybe a year and a half, on the streets doing sword fights. If anyone looks back on my Twitter, my ex feed, you can see a picture of me and Rob performing at Covent Garden with swords. So I'd been through the sword fights, and I immediately realized that because I do this technique of spinning from one character to another, I just flip very quickly, which you saw, and if people come and see, they'll understand what I'm talking about once they see it. I could just do that for the fight as well, but keep it very lively, very active. And also there's the thing is, it's not dangerous if you're sword fighting against someone who isn't actually physically there. Mm. So you can actually, I do ad lib some shots as well, which is something which is, I don't know if it really exists, because normally too dangerous to ad lib in choreographs stage fighting. But there's certain things that we wanted in it. The death of Claudius, I was talking with Selena Cadell, my director, and saying the death of Claudius at the end, it's not a big deal in the script. There's no famous last lines from Claudius, no begging or pleading. It's just, boom, he's out. And I don't know if Shakespeare thought, we've got to get to the wire. It's everyone's out here. But we've added something in it to make it, to draw it out a little more, to make Claudius slightly more pathetic in his end.
I love that idea that you're bringing up about drawing out meaning, even if it's not quite explicitly mentioned in the script. And I'm curious, you know, you're getting ready to wrap your New York run. You're heading to Chicago next. After embodying all the characters of Hamlet each night, have you gained any appreciation for the play or come to understand it in a new way, like what you're describing with Claudius?
Yes, I do think I did, because I did know the play somewhat, but I wasn't bathed in Hamlet. I now am completely have inhaled it. It comes from the legend of Amleth. So Shakespeare didn't write, I think, any of his stories. Story wasn't his thing, and he took stories. I think everyone was doing it at the time. I don't know when the idea of writing an original story came in, whether Kit Marlowe was writing anything. I think he was basing his things on things that had gone before as well, and all the other writers and Kidd and back in those days. But to know that the essence of what Saxo Grammaticus wrote of the legend of Amleth, A-M-L-E-T-H, which if you take the H off the end of Amleth and shove it at the front, you've got Hamlet, which is really weird. Did Shakespeare literally do that? He just took the H off and shoved it at the front? Anyway, the story of Hamlet. And then his kids also got a similar name. It all gets lost in the mists of time. But just to know this story and what exactly he was trying to pull out of the story, that is something that's is fascinating to me. And the fact is, I can do this now. I can just do this in a room. I can do this in a small amphitheater outdoors. I can do it without the lights on the stage. I can just get up and say, well, here's Hamlet. And, you know, it's about an hour and a quarter first half and 45 minutes second half. And the interval comes in between it. But it's it's wonderful to be able to do that. And I can take it all around the English speaking or to people who speak English around the world because it is so revered. And some people, they're quite scared of it. But hopefully the people who want to see it but think, oh, I've never had a great time with this, they come along and they will understand it. My brother's just done an excellent job on the adaptation, and it is accessible, as you use that word. That's what we wanted to make it. Kids from 9 to 90 should be able to come and grab hold of it and go, I see what happened.
It sounds like your experience is similar to the experience you're hoping theater goers have who see this show, where you're saying, I was not yet bathed in it, but now I can get it's accessible now. I can take it on the road. I can take it wherever. I get it. Is that fair to summarize it that way?
Well, yes, there's an accessibility that I can take it to places, but also I understand more the arcs of all the characters and what Hamlet's struggle was. And also, if you know the history of religion at the time, because the Catholic Christianity was just Catholicism. And in the 1500s in England, particularly, this is opposed to Britain, with England, with Henry VIII, it had been changing into Catholicism, but Henry was in charge of it. And then it changed into pure Protestantism. And then it went flip back with Bloody Mary, Queen Bloody Mary. She changed it back to Catholicism. It had flipped backwards and forwards. And people were out there who were Catholics, and purgatory, the ghost is going through purgatory. Purgatory doesn't exist in the Protestant faith. It doesn't even exist in the Catholic faith. But that's what Martin Luther was protesting against. People are paying money to go through purgatory quicker, but there is no purgatory. We've invented it. He was saying the church has invented it just to make money out of it. It's rubbish.
There's so much to dive into, Eddie. It's been such a pleasure. All of this and more is in Hamlet. Comedian and actor Eddie Izzard at the Orpheum Theater doing Hamlet, all 23 roles herself, until next Sunday, April 14th. Eddie, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much indeed. Good to talk to you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.